Hello and welcome to SEO 101 on WMR.fm, episode number 481. This is Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my co-host is my company senior SEO, Scott Fanak. How's your day going, bud?
It's going pretty well. You know, I'm just, as AI told me to say, I'm feeling like a featured snippet today. So I don't exactly know what that means, but I'm going
with it. I like it. It's nerdtastic. Love it.
Maybe someone can comment on Facebook what that's supposed to actually mean, because I haven't totally figured it out. But
yeah, that would be a great response. Anyone wants to put that
some
out
some creative answers. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's jump into some SEO news. This is an article that Cindy Crum, otherwise AKA Mobile Moxie, wrote, and it's excellent. Very thought provoking. It's caused a lot of heated but respectful discussion, which is really nice to see. Anyway, the point of her whole article was that Google may be using your Chrome to crawl content and more. So, as a sort of a mini summary here, Cindy discusses the implication of Google's mobile-first indexing and the company's controversial data practices. Now, this is a summary I had AI create, so I'll just read this off quickly. She highlights accusations against Google for manipulating facts regarding its monopoly in search, supported by evidence from the DOJ, indicating that the company utilizes engagement metrics to influence its algorithms despite previous denials. Now, there's more to that, but I'm going to, instead of giving it all away, I'll jump into some of the details here. So yes, the DOJ indicated there are incidences of Google using engagement metrics and despite their previous denials. So that's important to know. There's a relationship between Google's data collection and Chrome's market share, which creates a significant barrier for competitors because Google is using Chrome to collect data. They haven't denied that necessarily, you know, how they double, triple talk, but they have noted that there is a certain amount of information that is given from that. Even if it's opt-in, it's still there. Google's back forward cache, these are all incidences or aspects of her discussion here, may inadvertently expose private data indexed from web pages viewed by users, which also highlights privacy concerns. Now, the issue here is if you go backwards and forwards on a page, that content, which could be completely hidden from Google because there's no links to it, no one's putting a link out there, that could be indexed. And it is on a regular basis. There's weird stuff out there. Now, I'm going to get to how this is being debated, but we'll get into what she's mentioning here. There is evidence that Google is collecting detailed user metrics, including CPU and GPU usage, but this data collection is still somewhat hidden from users. Let's say completely hidden, because the only way to learn about it is to dig into the code. So I'd say that's pretty hidden. And this information is being passed along. There's no question about it. They literally showed the code. She showed it in their video. Chromium code is used to manage processing power for Google Meet, raising concerns about the extent of data captured by Google. I mean, what's being said in Google Meet? Who knows, right? It's definitely not always something that wants to be public. Also, by data sharing across services, Google's able to enable targeted advertising and content personalization, which impacts SEO and organic clicks. There is a lot here, a lot to unpack, quite frankly. The utility of Chrome has shifted from being a search engine support tool to a data collection platform for ad targeting and journey modeling. Now, I know I'm just spouting off a whole bunch of stuff here that I wrote down in notes, but this is the crux of it. If Google's using Chrome to help index the web, or crawl the web, I should say, I gotta get my words right here. That's a real problem because people aren't aware of this. What started all of this was the idea that potentially Chrome is being used to render JavaScript 100% of the time on websites and use that information to feed its data centers. Now, the reason they would be doing this is because, in Cindy's opinion, rendering JavaScript 100% of the time is just too system intensive. They couldn't just do that with all of their data centers. It would be just nuts. So how are they doing it? She found evidence from a person, and that this is part of what kicked it off too, that said, no, I worked on this system. They are doing it 100% of the time. So that let her down this rabbit hole, and she started to see all these pieces and pulled them together, which was really interesting. It's a really great video. I do suggest looking it up. Just type in Cindy Crum and on YouTube, and it's probably her number one video. I don't have the actual title here. Let me just click on it. And I'll read it to you. Phase two of Google's mobile first indexing is just Chrome. That's the title. Phase two of Google's mobile first indexing is just Chrome. Anyway, well worth the watch. It's 40 minutes. It's a lot of stuff she's showing here, but it's very interesting. Even she admits it's tinfoil hat stuff, but it's compelling. There's a lot of things here that seem to add up. For example, Google Analytics 3. We were forced to switch to Google Analytics 4. Google Analytics 3 would show more data that could incriminate Google to show that they were doing this. Well, that's evaporating. That data will not be available. Pretty hard to go back and take that and use it in court, right? If it's gone. Google Analytics 4 is a much different platform and doesn't have a lot of that data. Is that part of their plan? Another one was the extensive data collection. Does it pose a monopolistic risk? How can Bing compete against this? How can DuckDuckGo? How can, all these different platforms, how can they compete if they don't have Chrome? All good questions. And I'm just scratching the surface of what she outlined. It was really, really well done. But a lot of people have kicked in their thoughts, as they always would. But again, it was very respectful, which was nice to see. And one, Pedro Diaz, he was a former Googler. It's hard to say that quickly. He, I guess, worked on those systems. I don't really know with great clarity what his role was, but he felt quite strongly that what she was saying was incorrect and did put some notes together. However, she said, well, thank you, but a lot of what you're saying here really doesn't have any proof to it either. It's very interesting, and this is going to be shaking out for a while. She only wrote it and posted it yesterday. So it's shaken out big time. There'll be lots of discussion around it. Anyway, I think it was a nice addition to the SEO discussion right now. Google, I am certain, is doing stuff that I can't be more certain without having the evidence in front of me. But after working in this market for so long, it just seems so difficult not to believe that Google is doing this, or at least aspects of Chrome are being used to give them an unfair advantage. It makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. I, of course, didn't know they were doing this, but it's not hard to believe it. It's well within the realm of possibility that, yeah, they're probably doing most of these things that she's saying. Like, why wouldn't, like, really? I mean, they should be a bit more upfront about it, a bit more transparent, but the fact that they would do it. And then I don't know if you saw the part they said about OpenAI and how they're going to need something like $100 billion for their next training of the next generation of AI. Well, all of that, most of that is related to computing power that they just need to build out. Well, if Google's, doing distributed computing across everybody with Chrome, what does that save them? $100 billion in computing? Like, I don't know. Obviously, it wouldn't be all of it, but it saves them a fortune. That's a huge unfair market advantage, unless people using Chrome say, yeah, you can do that and agree to it. Would they? I don't know that I would, but maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, I don't know about the AI aspects of it, but it's pretty interesting that all of this is going to require processing power. You're right. I think the training models is the biggest problem, but they're also able to use the data here potentially for training models. And if that's the case, and I don't mean the distributed processing, not like, you know, SETI, the program or anything like that, where they're using your computer to help crunch data, but they're actually getting information that you're putting out there, content, reactions, discussion that could be used for like AI, large language models. Well, that's scary. I don't like that idea at all. And they would be in real crap for doing that. And a lot of what's been mentioned here, some of it, which is fairly compelling in terms of evidence, I don't know how well it hold up, but it's got to have the EU freaking out a little bit, because they're very strict about this stuff. And there'd be no gray area at all on some of this, this data collection. So they better be careful there. Anyway, one of the things that I think is the most interesting part of this is that Google had to find a way around this cookieless society. You know, this everything's going cookieless. Well, if you're using Chrome, they can, because of their tracking, pull all this together with that shared, that data sharing and journey modeling. That's pretty amazing. And that's a huge advantage for Google Ads, which explains why that has done well, whereas you see things like Facebook ads plummeting in terms of the quality, because they don't have that kind of leverage. Anyway, lots to talk about there. I mean, my brain's not in it today. Half a night of sleep didn't help, but let's just leave it at that. I'm sure there'll be more to discuss, and maybe we can pull it up again next time. What's next?
Well, the next stuff isn't as exciting, no. But it or as intense. But we got lots of little things here, which are kind of interesting. So as we talked about, I think it was in the last show, possibly the show before, Google removed the cache operator, which is like kind of disappointing in a lot of ways. But so now they've removed no archive documentation from, the information about no archive, that's been removed from the Google Docs. So no archive, the meta tag is no longer supported by Google. You don't need to remove the tag if you're using it. Just know that Google search will ignore it. Other search engines may use it, but it kind of makes sense because there is no archive being displayed anymore. So, you know, there you go. So if you use it, it's not going to do anything for Google. It doesn't apply anymore. But I do want to point out as well, because the one article at Search Engine Journal did mention this, and I think it's worth mentioning. If you don't want your content to appear in Wayback Machine, the no archive tag is not the right way to do that. So if you do want to also block Wayback Machine, archive.org, you can do that in your robots.txt by disallowing the agent IA_archiver. You can also contact archive.org directly to request page removal, and they'll actually remove content for you. Or you can place your content behind a password. So just a little bit there. Pretty rare that you want stuff blocked, but you know, it happens. So
no doubt. That's great. All right. Well, some information on Bing here. Wow. Sometimes I just forget all about it. Anyway.
Ooh, all right, Bing.
So Bing generative search experience is now rolling out. Here's a quote from Jordi Ribas from Microsoft. Microsoft is announcing significant AI updates across Copilot, Windows, and Bing. Our team is focused on Bing now, so I'm particularly excited to share the next step in Bing generative search, which is being rolled out in beta. To try it in the US, just type, quote, Bing generative search, unquote, into the search bar. You'll see a carousel of queries to demo, showing how it provides more relevant and comprehensive answers. Bing generative search combines the power of traditional search and LLMs in new ways, where the search results and UX layout are both optimized with generative AI. He's noting it works in the US, but is also working for you, eh?
It's working for me. Yay, Canada. We've had a few cases in the past few shows where things shouldn't work for me, but they do. It's a good time to be alive.
Don't feel forgotten. That's yeah. A good thing. Okay. Well, we'll see if this has any impact on market share. I doubt it. You mentioned it has gone up. What are your stats here?
Oh yeah. So yeah, I was kind of wondering if people will use Bing more now, because I tried it. So you can search Bing generative search and you get the demos, or you can just search for anything and then click the deep search button and get it for a regular search. Gotcha. And it's kind of cool. You know, maybe I'll try it a bit more. It was working. It was very, very slow. Like after several minutes, half the page hadn't loaded. So,
oh wow.
Be patient. But yeah, over the last year, you know, Google's market share has slipped by about 2%. And in that same time, Bing has gone up almost 1%. There's still no comparison. Bing's at like 4%.
Well, yeah, that's worldwide, right?
Well, this is worldwide. And Google is at like 90%. And I didn't want to go in a deep dive of statistics here, but it's just showing that Bing is moving up a little bit and Google's coming down a bit. Maybe this will help move the needle a little bit more. I don't think it's going to be their silver bullet that helps them kick Google's butt. I don't know if that's possible in any context, but
not with this big advantage, right?
Well, now maybe this will do it. I don't know. We know AI overviews are incredibly flawed still. I haven't seen a lot that are really good. And my few tests at Bing, it was kind of cool. It worked pretty well. So it just actually takes forever.
it's not really part of our program, so I didn't make it an actual component of our discussion here. But I did note today that ads have now been added to AI overviews. So there it goes. They're making their money. That's their goal.
You had to know that was happening. Anybody? Oh, well, I think we probably did predict it. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's pretty hard not to predict that one. It's like cars will get better.
yeah, exactly.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Okay, what's next here?
Yeah, so this is actually leads to something funny I'll talk about later as well. But Google is warning that if you use a JavaScript-generated product markup, it may not always work. So they've updated their developer documentation to warn about this with two key points. They said, if you're a merchant optimizing for all types of shopping results, we recommend putting product structured data in the initial HTML for best results. For JavaScript generated product markup, be aware that dynamically generated markup can make shopping crawls less frequent and less reliable, which can be an issue for fast changing content like product availability and price. If you're using JavaScript to generate product markup, make sure your server has enough computing resources to handle increased traffic from Google. So, really important, make sure your site is super fast, your hosting is top-notch, if you're using JavaScript to generate that. I think I'll dive into my little AI note because it's easier to do this right now. I wanted to confirm whether or not Shopify uses JavaScript. And I was pretty sure they didn't, but I wanted to confirm this because, you know, we have a lot of clients on Shopify, lots of people use it. So I went into ChatGPT and I said, does Shopify use JavaScript to generate structured markup for products? And the response was, yes, Shopify uses JavaScript and blah, blah, blah. And it gave me a big, long, multi-paragraph explanation of why it's important and a whole bunch of stuff. But the key is it said, yes, it does. But I wasn't sure. So I said, are you sure? And ChatGPT says, you're right to ask. Shopify generally doesn't rely on JavaScript to generate structured data. It's like, okay, awesome. So then I was like, are you really sure? And it confirmed the second one again. And I knew it used Liquid, which is, I'm assuming it's proprietary for Shopify, but I actually don't know that. But they use Liquid to process all that data. And so GPT said, yeah, okay, you're right. It is this. So then I yelled at them and I said, well, you really should fact check your answers before you give them to me. And it apologized and said, yeah, I'll make sure I do that in the future. Like as if, right? But it was kind of funny. Like, do you do this? Yes. Are you sure? No, actually, we don't. Like, come on.
Oh, my God. So now I'm going to have to ask, are you sure every time I get an answer from them?
Well, that's what I'm thinking every single time. If it's important and it matters, and we say this about content, like proofreading your content, but we don't always say it with stuff like this, with fact checking. But yeah, you got to fact check it. And I've never seen this situation arise where I was like, I think they're wrong. And you call them on it and immediately
that's
kind of awesome in some ways, but... A bit concerning.
All right. Well, and next up here, Google Search Console recommendations have not fully rolled out. They are rolling them out, though. This was live for a limited number of properties in early August. Now it's starting to roll out to all Google Search Console accounts, although no word on what countries. This new feature provides websites with optimization opportunities and suggestion or actions they can take to improve their presence on Google Search. The types of recommendations include issues that can be fixed, opportunities, configuration. I guess that's it.
That's all I'm seeing so far, yeah.
Yeah. These recommendations will be listed in the main overview screen when you log into Google Search Console. You're currently not seeing it anywhere yet. That's interesting. Now, Barry Schwartz checked a few dozen properties and saw it listed for only one. So they're taking their time on this one.
Yeah, it's early, but keep an eye out for it. It looks like it might be helpful. We'll see, I guess. But I don't know, is it going to be better than what we get from, you know, SEMrush and those other tools? I would hope so, but after about what you're talking about with Chrome and Google being not very transparent, I have a feeling they'll just tell us what they want us to know and leave the important stuff out.
Yeah, I doubt it'll be very, very important, very high. Well, none of them really think deeply about any of this stuff. It's just generalities of issues they see. So, yeah.
Totally.
Hey, if it helps a bit, though, that's great. For some people, that'll be a big help. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Google Search Consoles. Wow, we just can't stop it.
SEO 101 will be back right after recess.
Welcome back to SEO 101 on WMR.FM, hosted by myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company's senior SEO, Scott Vanak. Okay, so Google Search Console Performance Report built. Wow, that's long. Google Search Console Performance Report filters now stick. What the heck is title is that? Okay, you go on.
I didn't create the title. I just copied it. So don't get mad at me. Yeah, so this is over at Search Engine Land. They saw this happening, and this is kind of cool. I don't know if it's going to be a good thing, but I thought it was worth mentioning. If you go into Google Search Console and you're looking at your performance data, you can set various filters like, your country or certain keywords that you can exclude, things like that. So if you set those filters, close console, come back, those filters are going to remain intact. So they're always there. So this is probably good and bad, depending on how you personally use Search Console. If you're constantly adding the same filter regularly and you look at all your data under that same filter, it's kind of great. You won't have to add it every time you load up Search Console. If you'd rather have no filters, it might be kind of a pain, because if you do use a filter, you leave, you come back and you want to look up other data and you forget that your data is being filtered, you don't notice it, you might be skewed. So, you know, it's a benefit for those that filter it and keep it there or want to keep it there. It's a disadvantage if you rarely use filters, because it means you're going to have to be more observant and careful when you're checking data. But probably a good thing that they're doing there.
Well, why don't you take the next one here too?
Yeah. So I wasn't going to mention it because I try not to mention these search ranking updates, but I figured I would. This past, the weekend, the last weekend of September, the 27th to the 30th, lots of people were reporting about big ranking fluctuations. Maybe there's another update. Maybe there isn't. These things are always sort of willy-nilly unless Google speaks up and actually confesses to an update, but we're not seeing that, at least at this point. I'm not seeing a lot of fluctuations with the exception of one client, but that one client did a domain swap about 6 weeks ago. And so it could be coincidental that their rankings are starting to flow into the new site. It could be because of an update. Who really knows? It's good for them no matter what, because things are getting better, but I can't tie it directly to the update. So I don't have much more to say about it, but keep your eyes peeled. And if you see lots of fluctuations in, the beginning of beginning of October, end of September, you might know why.
All right. Yeah, from local SEO news, more Google Maps messes. It's just too much. Google. I can't wait till AI tries to parse that one out. Anyway, in transcription. Anyway, so schools on Google Maps are being renamed Hawktua schools. It's just, you can't make this stuff up. So yeah, how much we love and love to hate Google Maps and how pathetic its current systems are. Well, it's so easy to take advantage of it that pranksters are heading to Google and renaming schools to Hawktua.
Hawktua or Hawktua?
Hawktua.
Tua?
Is a viral meme started by a video by Haley Welch. I'm not going to describe it any more than that. You need to check it out if you really aren't sure about it. It's certainly viral. It's insane that someone just out of the blue can go and change the name of a school on Google Maps and it'll stick. How can they possibly defend that? It's It's like they're stuck in 1997 SEO and they just don't care.
You know what we need to do? We were talking about show number 500 and how we want some big name guests potentially. We need to get someone specifically from Google Local, one of their higher up local people, and just go through all these issues we've been talking about in past episodes and just grill them, just be brutal.
Yeah,
they'll never come back. So
they'll be so excited to come on.
Well, we tell them we want to give them an award or something, and then we just like, it would be great though to have an interview and like grill somebody, like we're, I don't know, in court or something. Of course we can't do that.
In court, yeah. See, what I would want to get to the bottom of is like, is it just budget? Are there only two of you? Who's running Google Maps? I mean,
there is the other guy's on holidays.
It can't be a massive staff. If they are, all they're doing is just managing barely what's there and not actually improving it ever. It's just a mess. I realize it's not a huge moneymaker on the surface, but there are a lot of connections to it that do make money. Why not improve it? Why not at least put in basic common sense? It's staggering. It's just staggering. Anyway, wow. Okay, so we're going to get into some questions and comments. What's this one about?
We got one comment, and it was mine. Here we go. I just wanted to share a quick bit of experience that I've seen here. I said that really badly. Sorry. A story about a friend of mine.
You should be.
You know, it's usually we do these shows in the afternoon and it's not lunchtime yet. So I think that's the problem right there. So I'm going to blame you for scheduling us in the morning.
We'll just throw lots of stories in there to make sure everyone knows we're Canadians.
Yeah. Lots of stories. Sorry. Anyways, this is just a quick story, a reminder to pay attention to your domain renewals. So I've got a friend of mine in town who has a small business locally and her domain expired. And now she's going through a huge fight to get her domain back. And in her case, it's kind of, she's within that sort of grace period where you should be able to just pay the fee and get it back. But there are other complications in this case because she has two GoDaddy accounts. And I'll get to why in a second. And she logged into one GoDaddy account before the domain expired, updated her credit card info because it had expired. So she updated that and then didn't think about it. And then her domain expired. Like, well, I did all this. Well, she updated the credit card in the wrong GoDaddy account. It was the other account that had the domain. And so now it's just ugly. And it's, in her case, it's extra ugly because the account that holds the domain isn't in her name. It's in her deceased mother's name because the business used to be her mom's. Her mom died years ago, but she never changed anything over. So it's still in the name of someone who's no longer living. And so it's just this big complicated mess. And honestly, I have no idea how she's going to fix it. I don't know if GoDaddy will be helpful or useless. It could go either way. Let's be real. But so in her case, at least she could actually, her business is such a small niche. She really doesn't even need a website to be, and I don't say that lightly. She really doesn't need one. So I think she'll be fine personally, but I just wanted to mention this as a reminder, make sure your credit cards are up to date in your registrar, whoever you're using, make sure your domains are updated and renewed and all that kind of stuff, because it can be ugly, especially if somebody dies, but even if they don't, it's ugly. And we haven't seen this with our clients that often. It's pretty rare, but when it happens, it can just be a mess and it can kill your rankings. Like, just kill them. So, yeah.
And they don't have to die either. They could just have a stroke and lose memory. I mean, it's that simple.
There's so many things, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, renew it for many years in the future, especially now domain prices are going up. I feel like, renewing
ridiculous.
Can we only go 10 years in advance now, or can we do more than that? Like, I can't remember where it's at these days, but. Do it for 10 years. And then, although in 10 years, it might be a problem because we're going to forget.
Well, one of our clients is on there. I mean, back in the day, well, let's just preface this a bit. Network Solutions was the main. Netsol.com, I think it was the place where you would get your domains back when I started in 97 and 98. And you know, you'd pay, I think it was $70 then for a domain. I think even US, $70 US. And you know, it plummeted all the way down to when I had, I don't know, 100 domains down to $8 or something, or, and worst case scenario, maybe 12 or 13. I've still managed to keep 13 to 15, I think, for my renewals. But, you know, you go to somewhere like GoDaddy and my client has just a .com, he's being charged $35 Canadian, or is it Canadian? Actually, that might be US per year. It's going backwards. It's like all of a sudden everything's just, it's exceedingly expensive for what you're getting. I mean, it isn't, I guess, if it's your main brand, whatever, you don't care, but it's amazing how much more these registrars are making now. And I don't really see why they can, or how they can justify that much of an increase. We're all increasing our fees these days. We have to with these crazy inflations and such, but wow, I just don't get it.
To see it quadruple, especially when the competition can do it for, you know, $10. Why are they 35? Like,
it's simple greed. And I guess they figure if someone's just doing one domain, they don't really care. They're going to spend that anyway. And capitalistically, I suppose that makes sense.
Well, you know, to be fair, if you aren't really tech savvy, like this friend of mine, she's a great example for this. She's not tech savvy at all. She calls me for like the silliest things on her site for help. And I help, and, you know, but sometimes like, why can't you do that? Well, the idea of her moving the registration of her domain to somewhere cheaper, forget it. It's never going to happen. She'll never do it because it's way too complicated. And I'm sure GoDaddy looks at that and they say, you know, we can, maybe we'll lose 10%, 20, whatever, some percentage of our registrations here, but we're going to make way more money on the people that don't know how to switch and don't want to go through all the loopholes to switch. So that's probably what they're thinking.
And then they'll get their email with them, and then they'll get all these, their website hosted there. Do not host your website at GoDaddy, please. We are not fans. It becomes simple. It's the place to be. It's one place, you pay all your bills, that's it. And I don't have any problem with that. It makes good sense. If that's all you're doing and it's very basic, you know what? A couple $100 a year is a lot for what you're getting, but if it's going to make you happy to be in one place, fine. You're not,
it's still going to work
with a big business, right?
Yeah, it still works.
Yeah.
Just what's a couple $100 if you're bringing in $1 million a year, right?
Yeah. Well, if you're doing that through your GoDaddy account, I'd be very impressed. Anyway. Well, on behalf of myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company's senior SEO, Scott Vanak, thank you for joining us today. Remember, we have a show notes newsletter you can sign up for at SEO101radio.com. Have a great week, and remember to tune in to future episodes, which air every week on WMR.fm.
Sweet. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.